Novelist Ann Patchett turns away from fiction in her memoir called Truth and Beauty. The book celebrates her friendship with poet Lucy Greeley. The two women roomed together at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. Ann Patchett remembers those days.
We shared our ideas like sweaters, with easy exchange and lack of ownership. We gave over excess words, a single beautiful sentence that had to be cut, but perhaps the other would like to have. As two reasonably intelligent and very serious young writers in a reasonably serious writing program, we didn't so much discuss our work as volley ideas back and forth until neither of us was sure who belonged to what. Not that it mattered. I told her the plot of a story I was working on about a magician's assistant whose magician is able to create the perfect illusion only in her dreams. But before I could finish it, she wrote a poem called The Magician's Assistant's Guilty Dream. I stole it back years later when I wrote a novel called The Magician's Assistant.
Today, Ann Patchett is best known for her novel Bel Canto. Her friend Lucy Greeley became famous as the author of a memoir called The Autobiography of a Face. That book told the story of Lucy's childhood cancer, the long ordeal of her treatment, and her effort to make a life for herself with a severely deformed face. Ann Patchett told Anne Strainchamps that she and Lucy actually met while they were still in college.
Lucy was just a little rock star on campus. She was incredibly popular. Everybody adored her. She had a million friends. She was a great writer. Everybody was in love with her poetry. And I was a real wallflower.
There's a scene near the beginning of the book when you and she have just sort of re-met for the first time and you're about to begin your life together as roommates at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And she sees you and just jumps into your arms. And you write, "I don't remember love unfolding. It was just there, huge and permanent and first." A kind of love at first sight?
It was. And of course, it seemed strange to me because I'd been looking at her for 4 years. And yet it was really the first time that she saw me. But I think that had everything to do with the fact that she was in Iowa. She'd gotten there a couple of weeks before me. And she was really lonely. She didn't have a million friends, which she always did in New York. So when I came in, I was someone that she knew and she had a connection to. And she was so desperate to have a friend there that she completely took me over. One of the things that Lucy and I had in common is that we were both terrifically friend-oriented girls. And so for her to have gone through a kind of period of friend withdrawal, she needed me at that moment, and I was there.
What do you mean you were both friend-oriented girls?
Maybe all girls are friend-oriented, and we just stayed that way. But we used to talk about this all the time, that for both of us, our friends really were the most important people in our lives. We had our family. We had boyfriends. We always said we could do without a boyfriend, but we couldn't do without our girlfriends. We had to have that person to debrief with, that person to come home to at the end of the evening, if it was on the phone or in person, and talk about everything that had happened, talk about our ideas, talk about writing, talk about what we dreamed about, what we wanted. That connection was air and water, was just so vital to life.
Lucy also needed a lot of reassurance. I mean, there's scene after scene in your book, she has a habit of asking you, "Do you love me? Am I talented? Am I pretty?" Where did that come from?
Well, she'd had a really rough time. She had cancer when she was 9. She had had 5 years of radiation and chemotherapy. She'd been in and out of hospitals her whole life. She was very, very different looking, and there were certainly periods of her life that she was teased and ridiculed. She had good cause to be insecure about certain things. She was incredibly secure also about certain things, about her intellect, about her talent, about her writing, about her sexuality. But there were always holes, and she was afraid that she was going to fall through one of these holes. She wasn't pretty enough. She was going to be alone all her life. Those things really terrified her.
Were there things you and Lucy could talk about with each other that you wouldn't talk about with anybody else?
It wasn't a matter of things that we would talk about because I didn't have secrets and she really didn't have secrets. It was more a matter of how we talked. It was that shorthand of communication that you have with anybody that you've loved for years and years and lived with and been with and know inside and out. She knew the things to say that would make me happy. I knew the things to say that would make her feel good about herself. We could just sort of cut right to the chase.
Don't you think there's something sort of mysterious about friendship? Because I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking, oh, it's so hard to put into words sort of the essential essence of a particular friendship. It grows out of who two people are.
It's true. Friendship is almost like a habit. And you can look back and say, I don't know where this started. I don't know how I became this person. But part of you just intertwines with that other person, especially, I think, between women and especially when they're young. And in high school and in college and in graduate school, we really put our friends first and then we grow up. And we get married and we have families and we have jobs and we're incredibly busy and we don't love our friends any less, but there's just no time anymore for that kind of intimacy. I mean, Lucy and I used to talk about what we were going to wear and what we were going to eat and did we want to go see this movie and had we read this book. We would just, any minutia in our life, we went over all of that every day. But I think that the thing that was really different about us is we didn't grow out of it. We really stayed that close all the way through.
Were there currents in your friendship, kind of, you know, if you, now that you can look back, large waxings and wanings that took place over the course of years? Because I think about my friendships and I think that, you know, there are years when certain friends and I have pulled apart a bit and then sometimes we find our way back together again and other times we don't.
I think that that is where Lucy's health really did play into things. Because she had surgeries, because there were really deep things she struggled with, that kept me much more in her daily life. If she was sick, I would go and take care of her. So there was not a time for us to really drift apart. Certainly in the last year and a half of her life, when she was using heroin, we were under that strain. That was very hard for me. It was certainly very hard for her. But I think that when you fall in love with heroin, that becomes your best friend. And I was bumped to the side, and I was angry about it. I was angry at her for doing the drug. But still, we were always talking about it, and talking about it really, really honestly. One of the things that I marvel about with my friendship with Lucy was that we used to fight. And I don't fight with my other friends. I don't fight with anybody. I have a very steady, even keel. But if I was mad at Lucy, I felt so deeply connected to her, and I so trusted the depth of our friendship that I could always say, you know, don't do this. I'm mad at you. We need to talk about this.
How did she become a heroin addict?
She came by it very honestly, actually. If you read her book, Autobiography of a Face, she talks about being addicted to codeine when she was 10. And I think that on and off throughout her entire life, she was often addicted to painkillers. I can remember her going into the hospital and having a surgery and being on a morphine drip. And then they would wean her off the morphine drip and she would go through the DTs and the whole thing. It was really horrible. And part of that had to do with her being a very small person and a person who had taken drugs her whole life because she needed them. One of the surgeries that she had where she had a bone taken out of her leg and put into her jaw, which was about 2 years before she died, she was given OxyContin, which was a wonderful painkiller, except she started grinding them up and snorting them. And when she ran out of the OxyContin, she then turned to heroin as a replacement for the OxyContin.
During some of those last years, she kept going, partly because of you and other friends, but you put an enormous amount of energy into taking care of Lucy. I mean, you spent time with her in multiple hospitals. You moved into her apartment and took care of her. You took her home with you. That must have been hard.
It is a really important point to make, though, that there were a lot of us. Lucy had several friends who were as devoted to her as I was, and then she had a whole second-tier level of friends, of people who would come by and visit her and bring her food and help her out and take her to the doctor. But if she wasn't at my house, she was at Sophie's house, and her friend Lucy Brock-Broder was picking her up. Her friend Ben was taking her to the hospital. There was a night that I remember. She always wanted one of us to be there when she woke up in recovery. She hated waking up after a surgery alone. It's very hard to be there when someone wakes up in recovery because obviously they won't let you stay and you never know when someone's going to come out of anesthesia. But there was a night when I think there were five of us who went to recovery separately, not running into each other, and said, "I'm her sister. I'm her brother. I'm her sister. I'm her brother." And they would let us in for 5 minutes and then throw us out, and then we would circle around and come back. So I never got exhausted by it, because when I couldn't keep going, I would step aside and there would be somebody else there who would pick up my slack. And when somebody else couldn't keep going, I would come in and pick up their slack. And we really worked together in rotation, which was a great, great testament to who Lucy was and how much people loved her.
I would think it would be hard to maintain the equilibrium of a friendship in that kind of situation where so much of it is kind of evolving into caretaking, into even a mother-child kind of relationship. Did that happen?
Show me a friendship with perfect equilibrium. Show me a love or a marriage with perfect equilibrium. I mean, I think that to love someone, to make that commitment where you say, "I will stand by you no matter what," then things can get incredibly out of whack, and you might have to be shouldering much, much more of the load. But do you look at that person and say, "Oh, well, you know, my definition of love doesn't include this, because now I'm having to carry too much of the weight"? And I can certainly list all of the wonderful things that Lucy did for me. Lucy understood me. She made me feel profoundly known and loved and heard. She had a lot of faith in me. And it's true, she never had to come to Nashville and clean my wounds and hold my head while I threw up. But that didn't make her any less an equal partner in our friendship.
Ann Patchett is the author of the best-selling novel Bel Canto. Her new book is a memoir of her friendship with poet Lucy Greeley. It's called Truth and Beauty, A Friendship. Ann Patchett spoke with Ann Strangchamps.